Talk that matters. Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. I truly enjoyed that first hour of talk. And we actually talked about a load of stuff I wasn't expecting to talk about the independent media, alternative media. It's massively important. I don't think people really realize what's going on in the world. But understand, the majority of the voices out there are being purposely co-opted for a reason. And you've got to be careful of that. This is why I love this platform. I was finding it very hard to find any allies when I tell the truth. So to find a platform that turns around and says, oh, you can have anybody on you want and talk about anything you want, I was just, it's wild. So I'm glad to be with you. I'm not sure about you, but I don't like the genocidal antics of the Israeli state. And I'm first to note the amount of women and children who have been killed via their targeted airstrikes. But however much we point out the murder of women and children, we forget that men have human rights too. Yes, myself and Ruckus, we have human rights as well. Even Basil Valentine has human rights protected him, apparently. But not if we look at things like Lavender. We found out recently that Operation Lavender, the AI system used to choose targets to be eviscerated by Israeli missile strikes, doesn't target only Hamas fighters, but actually any military-aged male. That means they're murdering non-military targets on a simple basis of their sex. International law is very clear and has been adopted by almost every supposedly civilized country in the world. In Britain, Article 2, the right to life, has been taken directly from the Human Rights Act. It states, everyone's right to life shall be protected by law. No one shall be deprived of his life intentionally, save in the execution of a sentence of a court following his conviction or of a crime for which the penalty is provided by law. But a lot of, as we've seen with the four journalists a few weeks ago who got blown up in Gaza, well, you can be sure that Lavender tagged them as being military-aged males. So now, if you're a man, it's all right to kill. It's all right for the Israeli government to target and kill you because they're using a new AI system, so why can't they? But the targeting of all military-age males in Gaza, regardless of whether they're enemy combatants, is now being accepted as a standard and acceptable legal action, it seems, when it clearly isn't. Every time Israel murder a man in Gaza, based solely on his age, they're breaking human rights legislation in a way which will come to haunt us all. Not every man is guilty of a crime, just because you're old enough to commit a crime. If a man in your family was arrested and convicted of theft with no evidence, and just because he was old enough to be convicted, we would be up in arms at the injustice. But we can no longer see the nuance. It appears that everyone can be sanctioned simply because they're old enough to commit a crime, not because they've actually committed a crime. What we accept as normal in Israel now will become normalized wherever else they choose to utilize that same technology and that same justification. On top of that, once a man has been murdered in a place like Gaza, their wife and children are left without essential support, and you ruin more than just one life. By the Western nations' acceptance of Israeli war crimes, we are not only accepting the brutal genocide, we are also accepting a change to international law, a change in our human rights. And we're giving our states the ability and authorization to target us with sanctions, including the death penalty, with no trial based simply on your sex. That, my friends, is a very slippery road to be on, and we are on that road. Now, talking about roads and coming up within, this is just now a week and a little bit away, This is only a week and a half away, the Weekend Truth Festival. Again, this is up in the Lake District. I wish it weren't so far away from me. If anybody in the chat can give me a lift, maybe I'll come along. If you would like to see us all, see all of your favorite freedom fighters on one stage across one weekend, then listen up. The Weekend Truth Festival will feature speakers such as Katie Hopkins, Kate Shemirani, Dolores Cahill, Matt Letizier, Mark Atwood, David Clues, Allegedly Dave, Sovereign Peter, many others. All of this across one weekend on the 3rd and 4th and 5th of May in Workington near the Lake District in the UK. Lake District being one of the most beautiful places you can imagine ever seeing. It really truly just looks like a picture. All you need to bring is a tent, a sleeping bag, and some good vibes, as food stalls, workshops, bushcrafts, and amenities will all be provided on site. For more information and to find out how to reserve your place at the festival, please visit weekendtruthfestival.co.uk. But don't hang around, because there's only a limited number of places which are still available. And if you're wondering why I'm laughing, well, there's a tent conspiracy that would be had. And as soon as I read the word tent, I started to laugh a bit. But maybe we'll talk about that with Ruckus in a sec. Right. And also, listen. Listen up. Do you have any suggestions for possible guests or hosts that you would like to hear on TNT? This is important, because this is something that I would like to hear from you as well. Or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss, then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT website. Help us make the difference on TNT.
It's the stuff.
What citizen wouldn't want to make America great again?
People are talking about.
Vilifying MAGA, it's just not going to work.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Excellent. Okay, on Tuesday, Tennessee lawmakers passed a bill that will allow teachers and other staff at school to carry guns inside classrooms. Woo! Here with the story, join me once again, is TNT News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. Please tell us more, Ruckus.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is very interesting. Something that I think a lot of folks consider common sense. See, we've got this issue. You've probably heard this reported in the news out here in America every once in a while. Okay, all the time. The media likes to overblow this when it happens. Anytime there's an event, a violent thing that involves guns inside of a classroom, we'll just say that way, they want to push and ban guns, but they never want to have a discussion about why are these places, i.e. schools, such easy, common targets for people who want to use guns to inflict damage. Well, it's because, you know, there are signs that say, hey, you know, there's no guns allowed here, which implies that everyone inside also no longer is, you know, protecting themselves with a gun, making them an easy target or a soft target. This is not me saying this. This is actual, you know, testimony from law enforcement, FBI studies, research, common sense. Even the shooters themselves write this down in their manifestos when they describe why they did what they did and why they chose the place that they did to do it. So, it only makes sense to harden schools, and this is one common sense way of doing it. Now, this is not just randomly giving every teacher or janitor a gun. They're going to train them before they allow them to carry concealed. So this is very smart. Anti-gun people and the anti-gun lobby and a bunch of retards, as soon as this bill was passed, flooded the Tennessee House gallery and started to chant, I'm not making this up, blood on your hands. And I just want that to sink in, because we do live in a world right now where there's other news happening where other people are chanting about folks having blood on their hands. I don't think that this is where we should be using this type of chant. But anyways, so yes, they did pass this. They approved the bill. The Tennessee House did. It's going to move up to the governor now. The vote passed at 68-28. This is 1 year after a deadly shooting, a high-profile one that was all over the news, claimed the lives of 6 people in Nashville, Tennessee. The state Senate, which is also controlled by the GOP, passed the measure earlier this month. 4 House Republicans and every single Democrat opposed the bill. It will now go to the governor, who's a Republican, Bill Lee. If he doesn't veto it, it becomes a law, regardless of whether or not he even signs it. According to the bill's summary, faculty and staff wishing to carry a concealed handgun on school grounds must meet certain conditions. They must first obtain an enhanced carry permit and receive written approval from the school's superintendent, principal, and the chief of the relevant law enforcement agency. Additionally, they are required to complete 40 hours of basic training in school policing and another 40 hours of training approved by the Peace Officers Standards and Training Commission, specifically related to school policing, each year and all at their own expense. Moreover, they must pass a background check and undergo a psychological evaluation conducted by a licensed healthcare provider in Tennessee. Under the bill, it would be prohibited to reveal which school employees are carrying firearms to anyone, including parents, other than school administrators and law enforcement officials. Now, again, as a, you know, common sense gun owner myself and an advocate of the Second Amendment, I stand for this move here. And I hope that we will be able to, see how this plays out in the near future and that other places around the country decide to do something similar. But what do you think about this decision, Johnny?
Yeah, I find it gives you mixed reactions if you're British. I mean, it gives you these feelings inside where you're like, you've been told constantly you shouldn't have guns, you shouldn't have guns, you shouldn't have guns. So that programming really does work, but I just can't stop. Every time someone talks about these things, I can't stop I want to well up about this as well. I can feel it inside. But Dunblane, that terrible Monday where primary school kids got shot. I mean, really young kids under the age of 10 got shot by a horrible individual, and there was no one there who could protect them. No one there. They couldn't run away. They couldn't get away. They were hiding for their lives, and they got killed. And then the response was ban all guns everywhere for sure, all of the time. And there is, of course, because we have a whole country where we don't have people with guns, we see a lot less gun crime. Instead, we see things like knife crime, things like that happen. And so we do see a hell of a lot less school shootings. But I can tell you, if those guns were around, if I lived in a society like in America, I'd want those teachers to be making sure that they could protect my child in that school. I would never want to see what happened on that Monday in Dunblane ever happen again. It's one of the most devastating. I was very young when it happened. I was quite young. I think it was about 13 or 14. And it was just, you couldn't even understand why someone would do that. And that's the problem, is that, a lot of the time that we can't understand the psychology of a madman. And so our reaction to it is very visceral, and it clouds all of what we should do for the future. I'm really glad to hear this, because I do think that there needs to be a massive amount of safeguards. But how many school shootings or how many public shootings in America have ever been done by a teacher? It's nearly always either a disgruntled former student, a sitting student, or someone outside the school. So it's very unlikely that we'll see people who are naturally naturally err on the side of child protection actually going out and doing something terrible because they've got a gun in the classroom. Though I did have a couple of teachers in school that had nervous breakdowns in front of their class. Now, I'm not sure the classrooms would have pushed them. This includes my form tutor, my main teacher through high school, who was a born-again Christian. And everybody who got expelled from every other high school in my city came to my school, which was forgiven and never expelled anybody. And they would all go into my class. So my class was full of really temperamental kids. And I saw her have a couple of nervous breakdowns. But I don't think she would have ever pulled out a gun and fired at people. So, I mean, I'm not sure the kids, I think the kids might behave themselves more if they know the teacher's packing heat. I'd have to say that this is complicated. It's complicated from someone who's British. I mean, you say you're a gun, a licensed gun owner there. I mean, I take it you agree with this.
I do, and I'm not a licensed gun owner because I don't have to be. You know, that's the way it works out here, especially in my state of Texas. So this acts primarily, more than anything, as a deterrent, to be clear, okay? I'll give you two quick examples, all right? I don't want to take too much time. Sorry, Johnny. But there was a gas station I used to walk to when I lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where I didn't feel so safe, but I would, you know, normally carry one with me. But the gas station I would walk to has signs all over the door, like big signs that says, "No guns allowed here, no guns, no guns, no guns." And I was like, this is the last gas station I want to go to, because any armed robber, this is the first place they're going to hit. And I don't want to be caught in the middle of it. So I stopped going there. Okay. Now, the other thing is, too, back in the day before I owned a gun, and I lived in a really bad neighborhood, I had a sign on my door of my house that had a picture of a gun pointing at you that said, "Forget the dog, beware of owner." And I didn't even own a dog. I didn't even own a gun. And my house was never broken into. So I think, more than anything, even if none of the teachers in Tennessee ever decide to actually do this, the criminals aren't going to take the chance. And that's the bigger issue, that this acts as a deterrent. So hopefully this will deter gun crimes inside schools, Johnny.
I love that. Thank you very much for bringing us that news. Adam, I'll see you again tomorrow. Really always look forward to speaking with you, my friend.
Yes, I'll see you then, Johnny.
Excellent. And may I just say as well, all of the people in the chat love Ruckus. They love Ruckus more than they love me. Anyway, I'm not going to cry about it. You're listening to the Johnny Bedmore Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's State of the Nation.
Ticked off, diverse, young, working class voters. Let's start with that class.
Yeah, so I mean, again, this is something I think people have been picking up on, obviously, through the Republican Party and since 2016. But how I kind of like to frame this is that you often hear people say, hey, what the swing voter is now is the suburban white woman. And I think Trump changed all of that. Obviously, in 2016, him winning the Rust Belt kind of showed a lot of people, hey, there's a different way to 270 than what is traditional for a Republican. And so when we looked at 2016 compared to 2020, and then what we're seeing now with voters, we've noticed this group. It's mostly men, but it's working class, blue collar voters under the age of 40. And these are people earning under $100,000, for the most case, earning under 75. And what we're seeing is they're highly dissatisfied with both parties. I'm not saying that these are people who love Donald Trump, but what they're seeing is people who are depressed with the state of the country right now, with the state of the economy, and with the state of their own lives.
State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
I'm Naheem Hines. I support the Muscular Dystrophy Association because they help my mom and kids like Ethan.
Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before.
Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
Our beautiful world is changing. Together with the Nature Conservancy, we can restore our lands and save our wildlife. Learn more at nature.org.
You are about to hear
today's news talk and the voice of freedom.
That's what this country is all about.
TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show, my friend, on today's News Talk TNT. Just a reminder to you all, you can get on tntradio.live. You can get on that chat. Ruckus has just joined the chat as well. And you can have a lovely conversation. But if you have any questions for my next guest, then put a little cue beforehand and feel free to ask a question. I have loads of questions myself, because doing the research for my next guest was really fun. It was like, oh, this guy actually agrees with me on loads of different things. And then there was a load of other things. It was just a flood. So my next guest is an extremely knowledgeable and highly regarded commentator. Dr. Bruce Baird is a former engineer, college professor, high school history teacher, present-day researcher, writer, and activist who believes you're never too old to ask questions, which is true. I say that's true. You can follow him on X at Dr. Baird Online, and Baird is spelled B-A-I-R-D. I think that like Logie Baird, if I'm not wrong. Or visit his website at drbairdonline.com. Again, very easy to remember. Bruce, you are a very interesting fellow for sure. Can you tell me, as an educator, to start off, how you feel about what's currently happening on campuses across America?
Well, I had a taste of political correctness back in the 1990s when I was in graduate school, and I didn't like it then. But back in the 1990s, you could still say things and get away with it. It wasn't like a deal breaker. Over the years, both as a high school teacher, I started realizing, even in a private school that prided itself on getting students to ask questions or question things, after a while, there were certain questions you just couldn't get them. Nobody would let you encourage students to ask those questions. There were certain questions they just wouldn't let you ask. And a lot of it, I did have experience with Jewish students and Israel. I had that sense of like, okay, that's taboo topics. I had Jewish parents would get much more irate than say Muslim parents or Christian parents. But in California, where I taught, Christians was like religion didn't mean much anymore. I had actually spent a lot of time in the southeast part of the country where religion was very important, and I could say things in a Christian context, with fundamentalist Christians, I could say things and they didn't bother them at all. But saying things in a high school classroom that might criticize Israel, raise questions about, that was taboo. I realized that. And so I just say it's getting worse and worse every year. And one of the reasons, it wasn't just that, there was many things that were changing in the schools, public schools, private schools, and college, that was making it impossible for me to be a part of it, right? One of the big reasons I retired in 2017 was just like, okay, I can't encourage students to ask questions. That was my key goal. That was my achievement as a teacher, to get them to question things. And you can't do that. There's questions that are just taboo. Yeah.
What do you think changed it? Because, I mean, you say 2017. Loads of people that I speak to saw some sort of societal change happening around 2013, 14, 15, 16 that has led us to this strange world we live in today, where the things that were taboo, people want to question, but of course we're still living in this sort of like world where we're not allowed to question. What do you think changed? What do you think has happened to us that has made us get to a point where there's so much conflict of interest in even having like basic conversations?
Yeah, I think about 2013-14 was about when it started happening. I was oblivious to it. Students would tell me about it. Students who wanted to question things, or students who were did not follow the political line. That was basically in the school I taught, all the teachers and the were pretty much liberal Democrats, and they sort of followed that line. You couldn't challenge them, and Republicans were evil, bad. And there were certain students whose parents were Republicans. This was an expensive private school, and so there were a lot of parents who were Republican, and they didn't, of course, like the fact that their kids couldn't espouse their political views. And I said, yeah, you should be able to espouse your political views. So we're trying to encourage students to question things. This is the age to do it. But the students would tell me they felt uncomfortable. These were, again, mostly these were independent-minded thinking students or conservative students or parents who were Republicans. And I said, well, and I try to raise it at teacher meetings, faculty meetings, where we used to be able to raise all kinds of issues like this, but what you could and couldn't do. And they were very concerned about people who were, like using the wrong terminology, that political correctness started creeping in. Like the faculty was much more concerned about those issues than the fact that students couldn't question those issues. You couldn't even raise the issue that there was issues you couldn't talk about. You couldn't even talk about not talking about it. And I started seeing like, I don't know what this is about. I couldn't figure out why it was happening. I could just see that it was happening. And those students eventually just had to learn to shut up or be ostracized. I was getting more and more ostracized. Things that I hadn't been ostracized for 10 years ago. In fact, I remember when I first started in 2000, I first started teaching at this high school in 2002. I'd come out of the experience of teaching at the University of Alabama in Huntsville, which is, again, a very fundamentalist Christian part of the world, Northern Alabama. And I would raise questions about historical Christianity. You know, who wrote the Bible? Who was Jesus? And my students, fundamentalist Christians, like 90% fundamentalist Christians, they ate it up. They didn't buy it. There was nothing I was going to do to convince them that, but they thought it was very interesting. And so I was able to get away with a lot of stuff in a pretty much a fundamentalist Christian atmosphere. But when I came to California, I thought, oh, I'm going to do the same thing. Oh, these are students. They don't, religion is not even an issue anymore. As I saw, California is very non-religious. But I was going to do this. I was going to do fundamentalist Christian, fundamentalist Islam, which I thought that was it, the iffy one, and fundamentalist Judaism. So I had all these things about what happened when, you know, who was Moses, you know, who wrote the Bible, all these, a lot of things that weren't really controversial at a college level. And I thought, oh, they don't care about religion that much, so it won't be controversial in high school. Oh, was I wrong? When I raised it, I just picked an article. I think it was out of some kind of mainstream magazine, Colliers or something. And it was about the current archaeological evidence in Israel. Okay. And I thought it was a great article. But immediately I had three of my students whose parents said, we're going to forbid our students from reading that magazine or doing that homework assignment because it was written by an anti-Semite. Oh, he's a famous anti-Semite. And that's in a mainstream magazine article. And I think that's a good summary. I know enough about the archaeology. I thought, this is a good article. So they said no. And then the headmaster of the school brought me in and said, well, we're not going to tell you can't teach this stuff or use that article. But, you know, you're stirring some things up. And I said, you know what? I can do so many things in this classroom. I don't need to do that. But the fellow teachers at the time, this is like 2002 or 2003, they were saying, go to it, go to it, go to it. They were encouraging me to do these controversial things. They thought, we need to expose the students to these things. We need to have them question this stuff. So that was 2000. I was like, okay. And that was I can do that. I just choosing not to do it. But I kept doing controversial stuff through the following years. And then I said, around maybe 2013, 14, 15. Okay, I couldn't do that anymore. I couldn't even think about doing that kind of stuff anymore. Anything controversial, anything that would raise... the whole issue of like the sensitivity of students, or they'd feel, you know, whatever it was, just don't do that, you know. Okay, all right. And that's when I started questioning stuff like 9/11. Oh, that was controversial stuff. I started bringing that into the classroom. No.
We'll definitely get onto that. We're going to have to take a short news break. I can't wait to get talking about some of this properly. Really looking forward to this because it was some of the things you speak about need to be spoken about. So let's take a quick news break. Sure. You're listening to Today's News Talk on TNT.
What's happening?
Newsflash.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Israeli Defense Forces are reportedly preparing for a significant ground operation in Rafah, Gaza, which will begin with the evacuation of over 1 million Palestinians, according to a report by Can 11 citing American officials. Russian Deputy Defense Minister Timur Ivanov has been arrested on charges of large-scale bribery, as announced by Russia's investigative committee. The Polish studio AIO announced the world premiere of a new biopic titled Putin.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. I just want to quickly go across to the chat. I see Wee Fat Shug said, our reality changed in 2012, Johnny. Since then, we've had to adjust to the changes. The yellow sun world is gone. I think a lot of people feel like that. And what you were saying, Bruce, just before the break there was, you know, this fact that you're no longer allowed to talk about certain things. And that happened all at the same time. Now, it made me think that maybe this had something to do with the introduction of the nudge units into governmental policy under Obama during about 2008, 2009. Richard Thaler, Sunstein, others had created what is basically psychological operations that can be used by governments. Same thing got incorporated into Britain as well under the Cameron administration, where they brought over Thaler, who they basically tried to convince people that we can nudge everybody into behavior by making them feel bad here or making them feel bad there. Do you think there's an element of government-grade psyops happening that is causing people to be so fearful about using their voice and speaking out about certain subjects?
Well, I mean, I'm certainly familiar with Cass Sunstein and his writings. I will say from my experience, my personal experience, I did see it coming through the teenagers. I thought parents are being pushed by the teenagers. And so who's ever controlling? Mm-hmm. And they were all into social media at that time. You know, they're glued to their phones. If you're a teacher, you'd say, hey, you know, you look, they're doing that stuff under the table, under the desk or whatever. So they're that whole era of that. And, you know, of course, game playing for the boys. I don't know how that is. The boys are all addicted to game playing and the and everybody else's tech thing, and LOL and all that, you know, all those little secret languages they started developing. And I felt that in the high school, it was being pushed by these teenagers who were pushing, just the really pushy teenager are pushing the adults, their parents, and their parents are pushing back, and they're pushing the teachers, and the teachers are caving to, we're being run by these teenagers. And so, and especially these teenagers grew up to be whatever, and the college students. And I remember asking the students, because, you know, I went there and I believed in freedom of speech. I mean, to me, that was just the basic principle I imbibed when I was a kid, and I believed it. I still believe it. And I'd ask them, do you not believe in that anymore? And these are both like former students who are going to college and as well as continue. They didn't. Freedom of speech is something totally foreign to them. This whole like concept of it. No, there is no such thing as freedom of speech. And the parents who were my age, and then increasingly younger than me, they couldn't question that. I mean, they weren't going to go there. They weren't going to try and change their students' minds or their children's minds. They were running the show. But through their parents, getting pushed, the administration, the faculty, everybody being pushed to accept this is the new world you're living in. Okay.
There is
no say in the matter.
Yeah, there's a lot of my work, a big bulk of my work is about how intelligence agencies and operations target the youth and have targeted the youth through, of course, going all the way back to Kissinger's International Seminar at Harvard, or the Young Global Leaders Program, for example, as a ways to target younger people who will go on to do things later in life. What you're saying about the pushing, it seems like maybe that development of psyops, nudge units, things like that have much more of an effect on the teenagers than they do the adults, and then the teenagers make life difficult for the adults, and we are, for some reason, we fear being seen as wrong by the generation who hasn't been taught properly yet anyway and don't seem to know. And it also gave rise to these characters like Ben Shapiro and Jordan B. Peterson, who were suddenly up there saying, oh, you know, they were having arguments with children on stage about things that are course reality, and the kids are all getting angry and the kids are all disagreeing, and it makes these people look even more intelligent. You know, people like Ben Shapiro are able to say, oh yes, look, I know all of these different things, but in actual fact they're just stating facts that were previously were well-known facts, but now you can't say without a load of kids screaming at you. So I do feel that let's go on. What stance do you take on what you're currently seeing in Gaza?
Okay. Well, I mean, right there from October 7th, I was all on it. I had a lot of, August of 2020, I've been very active on social media, Twitter or X, they call it. Questioning narratives, official narratives, and collecting a lot of stuff. We're pointing where a lot of events, I was pointing the finger toward Israel as being the culprit, as a certain Israeli MO, modus operandi. And this is mostly historical. I'm an historian. And I started in 2020 with the Beirut blast, the big explosion. I knew enough about explosions. I knew enough about craters, I really knew a lot about craters. I've been questioning and doing a lot of research on craters formed by explosions, craters formed by underground explosions, above ground explosions, surface explosions. And I had gone back and researched a lot of the literature going back centuries, in terms of what happens. Mostly because I was interested in these car bombings and car bombings that have been blamed on Hezbollah or whatever. And there's people who were telling me, at least on social media, people like Joe Viles. I don't know if you know people like Joe Viles, Dmitry Kalasov, that that it was impossible. A car bomb could not cause a crater. I mean, they're saying literally the whole official story is wrong. Car bombs do not cause craters. We get all these terrorist incidents left craters. These holes in the ground, they can happen. So I started doing research to say, yes, indeed, you're right. They cannot cause craters. So I've been doing all this research for about a year up to the point of August 4th, the big Beirut blast 2020. And here it is, this explosion with this huge cloud and all these people immediately on social media saying, it's not nuclear, but it looks nuclear, it's not nuclear. And I went in, and they reported a few days after the event, this huge crater. There was this lake now, right off the sea, right where this warehouse used to be. And they gave me how deep it was. It was like 43 meters deep. I said, 43 meters deep? that's like a 13-story building. This is a very, very deep crater. And I said, there's no way their official explanation based on ammonium nitrate in a warehouse is going to cause a crater like that. Yeah, and that just sort of triggered me. At that point, I just started attacking left and right all these official stories, and a lot of it centered in the Middle East, and a lot of it centered in Lebanon, and not so much Gaza, not so much Israel, but stuff in Syria and Iraq. And so when October 7th happened, not just the explosions, but the propaganda that went with it, how the media could convince people that Israel was not responsible for any of these things. And why saying, yeah, they are. It fits their classic MO. They're the only people who could have this kind of, who had the access, So when that happened, I said, well, firstly, I'm not going to believe anything the media says on October 7th. So I started drawing upon all my literature about Netanyahu and everything to question everything. Those people in the little kibbutz, this BS, okay. And just analyze, how do you analyze the people that these babies were beheaded? Boom, boom, boom. And people started saying, there's an explosion somewhere, a little something, and I started criticizing that. The trouble was that I would do that and it was going nowhere. There were so many people that were questioning it, but they weren't looking at it the way that I looked at it. I was based on this historical patterns, evidence, and they were trying to say, whatever. They just don't like that way that women, they don't believe that women who's reporting about the beheaded babies. Okay, yeah, you're right. But look, there's a pattern. There's this pattern that you can see the way Israel deals with these issues like this. They do it over and over. They've been doing this whole, Hezbollah or the evil Hamas or whatever, capable of the worst atrocities, for like decade, and here, so you could see there's a pattern. This is a pattern. This is a repetition. But yet, it lay flat. Anything that I could add to it would lay flat. The people wouldn't pick up on what I was saying about it. And, they didn't need it. They didn't need me. They didn't need what I was saying. So they're saying the same things they've been saying now for a decade. And I'm just saying, we're not going anywhere. I have lots and lots and lots of other events that we could look at that would be very controversial. Nobody talks about that. I also could finger Israel. If you want Israel, you want to finger them as a really bad guy, as a culprit for a lot of things. Come look at all the stuff I've done on Twitter for the last 7 years. I've done a lot of stuff fingering them for a lot of atrocities that nobody talked about. Wouldn't that help their case of saying, what's going on in Gaza is, it's the pattern. It's the same thing they've been doing now since 1979 or 1948 or whatever you want to say it.
It seems that there's, there's a lot of cognitive dissonance. There's a lot of separation between people's reality. What they see on the news tends to drive what they're thinking and what their conversations are. Listen, we got to go to the last ad break. So I'm really interested to get back and get straight back into this. So you're listening to Today's News Talk on TNT.
Military families often sacrifice precious time away from loved ones while serving our country. And for those with children, the separation can be especially difficult.
We were worried that with him leaving, that she would lose those connections with her dad.
Some of life's best moments happen between parents, children, and the pages of a good book. United Through Reading provides that connection.
You can watch your mom or dad read a book to you, and it almost feels like they're really there.
We ensure they remain a consistent, meaningful part of their children's lives, no matter the distance.
Just seeing Jacob recognize Daddy again after a long time just melted my heart.
And now, as we're facing greater isolation from our loved ones, United Through Reading is also available to veterans. Learn more about United Through Reading and download our free secure app at unitedthroughreading.org.
I tell my son, I love you every single day.
I love you.
Now, my dad has never said that to me. Not because he doesn't love me, but because culturally it wasn't comfortable for him. Now that he's a grandfather, he says, I love you to my son every time he sees him. My advice to all the fathers out there, forget the cultural restrictions. They grow up way too fast for you to waste even a single precious moment.
This is Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk.
TNT.
So I'm here with Dr. Bruce Baird, and you were saying about the, questioning the narratives. You were talking about October the 7th, people not really wanting to hear the facts about what was actually happening. I look across, Wild Heather said, she said it a couple of times in the chat over the past few weeks. She said, Israel opened a door and rolled out the red carpet for Hamas, conveniently not questioned. And there has been further evidence to suggest that as well. So this does look like they were looking for a pretext to go into something big. But then you go into much, you go back in time. So you talk in also about the Oklahoma bombing, what happened in Beirut. And why do you think all of these narratives are questioned for a very short amount of time and then moved on quickly? Why do you think that it's so important for them? I suppose I'm leading your question there a bit, but do you think that this is really just a conspiracy to stop us from talking about actions that they take and then to make things like wars happen and make things happen? Is that what we're seeing here? Is this basic conspiracy 101?
I wish I don't want to think the worst of people. It's to give people the benefit of the doubt. I don't know why people do what they do. I know from my experience, if I say, are there things that I don't want to talk about? And I say I would know from my experience at teaching at this high school, one of the things I taught for 20 years, I taught the Holocaust. Okay, we're talking about a taboo topic, the Holocaust, right? But 20 years I taught it. And gradually, every year, I would ask questions myself and do research and ask more and more questions. And I would bring those questions in the classroom. Or a student would raise a question. And I felt compelled to address this. And more over the years, I was raising issues and students were raising issues that questioned the official narrative. But I knew this was a very, 9/11, this is a very topic you have to do very carefully. But it was getting to the point where they'd bring on some Holocaust survivor and they said, oh, these stories are getting so implausible. This person cannot have done and been the places that he said he had. They're getting too old. So those kind of things. And again, this was something that, again, I didn't know how to do. I said, I'm going to have to stop teaching the Holocaust. I cannot do it because I raised questions that they won't let me raise. So I know when I go on Twitter, I have yet to do anything to question the Holocaust. I have tons of stuff. I could do it. I could jump into this. And that would really undermine the Israeli narrative, the official narrative. But it's not going to be productive. So I choose not to do it. So am I silent? Am I part of a conspiracy to not bring it up? I don't know. I just think there's so many things that are more likely to stimulate conversation or more likely to continue conversation than the Holocaust. But yet, ultimately, one day it's going to have to be addressed because it's at the heart, it's heart of a lot of the stuff that's wrong with the narrative that we keep repeating. But so I bring up, say, Oklahoma City. Okay, there's a good case. Is Israel responsible for Oklahoma City? Well, if you look at the MO and all the things that I dig into, I certainly wouldn't ignore that possibility. They do a lot of things like that, and they're responsible for a lot of things that I found, which to me involved this whole controversial issue of these third generation nuclear devices that leave very little radioactive trace. And there's a whole lot of things that I've done a lot of research on. But that doesn't go anywhere either. People won't, even more so, I've done a lot of work on the 1983 Marine barracks bombing in Beirut. I have tons of stuff, and I'm not the only one who's questioned that too. So it's like, but I cannot get anybody really in an alternative media to question that. And I think if you really want to say, hit the Americans, you know, like, okay, 9/11, yeah, but that 1983 Marine barracks bombing is still fresh in the mind, at least of a lot of Marines. You know, that's probably why it's a taboo topic, because we're talking about Marines being killed. And so what, you know, the official story, oh, well, Hezbollah, there wasn't that. No. The official story is BS. All the alternative stories people talk, oh, Israel knew it was going to happen. Yeah, they know it happened because they were behind it. They did it is why they knew they were behind it. But it's a story that I have tons and tons. I mean, I have more stuff on that than I have on probably anything except the Beirut blast. And but it won't go anywhere. I can't get anybody like Lucas Gage. He was almost there. You know, Lucas Gage, he's a former Marine. I said, oh, man. And he started questioning, like he started opening his mind to the idea that maybe the official story was wrong. But no, and the ultimate, he can't go there either. I don't think any Marine can really go there. Alan Zabrowski, do you know him? Anyway, he's not a former Marine. I've gotten a single Marine that would question that official narrative about the 1983 Marine barracks bombing.
Why do you think, I mean, I agree with a lot of what you're saying here. And I'm a deep researcher, so I see that nearly every single event in history, including the Holocaust, is not, did not play out like we were told. I mean, World War II in general did not play out.
Pearl Harbor, I used to teach that.
Yeah, it's in, and again, I mean, there's possibly similarities between the driving of context for Pearl Harbor and October the 7th. You know, to try and make something happen and yeah. Try and cause something to happen. So I agree with you completely. What do you think then? How do we get past that? And how do we get people speaking and questioning all of the narratives, not just the ones you're allowed to question?
Right. That's the stuff I saw with that 2020 was an important year for me. I was the one where I really just started saying enough of this BS. But that was the year that the COVID started. And I remember most of the stuff I'd done before COVID was 9/11 related stuff, getting people to try and question the 9/11. But I mean, I saw COVID immediately. It's okay, this is BS. And I could just have my antenna tuned to BS. There's BS left and right. So I immediately started on Twitter, shifted everything from 9/11 to attacking the COVID official narrative that was coming out. And I try to see all these people who've been questioning 9/11, were they gonna come along? No, we're all about 9/11 critics. Why are they questioning the COVID narrative? They disappeared. Or where's all the people who have been questioning the Middle East issue, which I also was very concerned? They're not questioning COVID. Oh, occasionally some people started coming on board here and then, especially when the narrative started turning it. And then again, here comes the Beirut blast, August, you know, just several months after all the COVID started. COVID's going on, but I started focusing on these other issues besides COVID. And I'm thinking, so all the people who've been challenging COVID, are they going to come along and question? Because a lot of alternative media people were questioning the COVID narrative. And no. And in fact, this is when I started using the phrase, I call it the so-called alternative media. I put hashtag scam, because they're not going to question this. This is an official story that was laid out within hours of something very complex about the official, you know, 2750, you know, tons of ammonium nitrate there. And no, nobody's going to question it.
I was talking with Adi Ads in the first half about this, about, I mean, we both gave an estimate of about 50 to 60%. We agree on a roughly that of the, probably more of the independent and alternative media is actually co-opted by intelligence agencies, whether they know it or not. They tend to be pushed. And of course, the budgets for these intelligence agencies are out of control. So when did you start first? Because, I mean, it helps to have the ability to use logic and reasoning to come to a conclusion. So when did you first start analyzing things like explosions, which you've discussed about in Oklahoma and Beirut?
Well, first I go back, and I was a latecomer to 9/11 Truth. It didn't happen until the summer of 2013. And that's when I really started questioning the official story of 9/11. But I didn't, you know, have an idea of what actually happened there. I had no knowledge of that. I was just trying to figure out how to get my students, how to get other people to question the story. And so that really was my focus until the Beirut blast in August 2020. I mean, I've been doing research like about craters and explosives for about a year before the Beirut blast. And I had an background in engineering. I had a very analytical mind, very left brain kind of way of approaching things. So I could read the literature and I could understand it. And I didn't do anything with it until the Beirut blast. But at that point, I said, okay, I'm going full blast, because nobody's going to question any of these things, any of these events, like the 1983 Beirut blast or the whatever, London bombings in the 1990s or the Moscow's 9/11, the 1999 apartment bombings there in Russia, and just started going one after the other. I started doing Operation Northwoods. It's something that everybody accepts. No, it's BS. It's complete BS, but nobody questions it. Nobody questions it. This came out of this James Banford's book. It's BS completely, and nobody. And I put everything on Twitter. Everything is there. I laid it out, connections, links. And that's just, but now to go back, just to finish up with that, about a year ago, I started saying, I'm getting tired of this because I'm doing this and it's going nowhere. Nobody's questioning. Nobody, I'm not getting conversations. I'm not getting what we're having right now. Nobody really wants to question any of this. People who's like they like the stuff I do, they don't really understand it. Or I see myself cited and say, that's not right. I didn't say that. And so I get involved in little conversations with people who like what I did, but they don't quite understand, even though I try to lay it out in these Twitter threads. And so it's kind of getting tiresome. And I'm unfortunately, yeah, maybe this conversation will stimulate me to want to get back and
I hope it does. I hope that having conversations about this stuff and open and honest is the best way to go. Do you think that, I mean, people in the chat, someone was just saying, Penelope Pitstock's ghost was just saying, you know, all wars are started by a false flag attack, you know, that, do you think that all we're seeing is the redesigning and remodeling of the world order, and they're just using all of these different devices that they've got at their disposal to do that? Is that basically what we're seeing? We're seeing bombs going off to, again, like we were talking about with nudging people into a direction using psychological operations. Is this nudging people into to seeing the enemy that they want us to see?
Oh, I mean, and you're saying this goes back to hundreds of years. I mean, yes, false flags have been used to start wars. I mean, just America, we have the Mexican War in 1848, you know, the American Revolution. There's a lot of shenanigans going on with that Revolutionary War. Pearl Harbor, World War One, Spanish-American War, 1898, the sinking of the Maine. I mean, and as a historian, I could talk about Pearl Harbor. Nobody got work, although nobody in alternative media will talk about it. But in my classroom, maybe in a college classroom, you could talk about questioning Pearl Harbor because it happened so long ago. You know, the Spanish-American War, sinking of the Maine, 1898. Yeah, that you can talk about. Nobody cares anymore. But 9/11, yeah, that's going to care for a long time. And then these other things, see how they do, like you said before, they just disappear. It was yesterday's news. Nobody cares. I'm an historian. I want to go back in there, but nobody cares what happened 4 years ago, 2 years ago, whatever, 1 year, 3 months ago. You know, they've moved on to that from October 7th. They moved on to the baby beheading. Okay, what happened to that baby beheading? Oh, we don't know, but there are some nurses maybe that are raped, or maybe there's something happened there, you know, and of course, you know, the narrative changes. And yeah, people, they buy it. They don't question. There's no forum for really questioning to get other people who feel, I'm going to stand out and I'm going to be brave. I'm going to question this stuff, you know.
Dr. Baird, you are the man. I love you already. And we're right at the end of the show. So thank you so much for coming on. We will do this again and we will question the narrative together. I promise you that. Thank you, Dr. Baird, for coming on.
Thank you. Look forward to it.
Real pleasure. And thank you all for joining me today on another Johnny Vedmore show. I've been blown away by the honesty of people today. So thanks to Addy Ads and of course Dr. Bruce Baird and Ruckus, of course, and all of you who have been watching. If those interviews had been on CNN or BBC, I think we would have seen many viewers having seizures and going epileptic. So which is probably needed if we're going to make real change. So thanks to all the people in the chat as well. You know you're my heroes for getting involved. I love you guys, and I love the fact that you are so down to earth. Stay tuned for the Mark Morano show up next. Until we see each other again, my friends, stay safe, stay wide awake. I will see you tomorrow on another day.